You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you could find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcast. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like MF Uncensored and the Multiverse Fancast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me in the studio is Sean. Sean, how are you?
Oh, I'm amazing. Okay. Just amazing.
I wasn't sure if there was more.
No, I'm just amazing.
Just amazing. Yes. That's it. Yeah, I mean, yes. Like amazing like Spider-Man.
I feel great.
Yeah, you look great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also, joining us via the Zoom studio, BlindBat8719 himself, our dear friend and listener, Brendan. Brendan, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, guys. It's a pleasure being on the show with you today.
Pleasure's a strong word.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great?
You think? Yes. I think it's going to be great.
You're very optimistic today. I like it.
I am. Considering anytime Brendan is on our podcast, it is always fun.
It's always fun. Even though we're talking about where the Harry Potter movies start to get a little darker, a little bit scarier.
You just did a motion of they meant they suck. No, I didn't. You went downwards.
But it was the only way to correlate to what I was saying with a hand motion. So I have another hand motion for you if you want.
Save that for what we do with the new Star Wars trilogy
oh
in a couple
my God,
months.
God, why do you guys keep bringing this up? But so Brendan offered to join us because I invited him and he said yes. So I don't know if that's really an offer.
Doesn't it feel good when people actually take your offer to join you
every once in a while? Yeah,
it's great.
But Brendan also has been listening and offered a little bit of insight and a little bit of feedback, so we're gonna take some of his advice in stride and see if he does better than us,
which is definitely gonna happen.
Yeah,
we'll see. I just want you guys to be the best you can possibly be. But I mean, also congratulations to you guys. What, it's 8,000 downloads you guys had
for MF Uncensored is getting up to almost 10,000 downloads. Yes,
wow.
That is really impressive, guys. So congratulations to you guys on that.
Thank you. Yeah, MF Uncensored really took off, and it's pretty awesome. And then there's us trugging along, just talking about movies and stuff. Hey, it's a good time.
I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
The only person that complains about our episodes is Brendan anyway, so.
I love constructive criticism.
I will say, though,
criticism.
You guys do brighten up my week. You do when I'm like, oh, hey, I have a new episode to listen to. Let me hang out with my friends for a little bit.
I know. For those of you guys who don't know, we've known each other, Brendan and I have known each other since grade school.
So almost 30, yep. Little almost 30 years.
Oh, why'd you put a number to it? Oh, my God.
Well, you and me are on 20.
Oh, stop putting numbers to this. Just say long time. Love you long time. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Now people know that we're like actual adults doing this, like full adults. People ask.
Big
like,
difference though. It's your basement and not your parents' basement.
Yes, thank God. Now it's technically my wife's basement. We'll just say it. She's the real home house runner here.
That's true.
That is true.
Or the cat's basement.
Mazikin the podcat. All right. If you guys want to see pictures of Maze the podcat, make sure you check out her Instagram. He usually pops up there some point. But so we are continuing our series on Harry Potter, going through each film one at a time. Again, in honor of Hogwarts Legacy that just came out.
Yes.
I'm almost done with it.
Really?
Wow. I'm not exploring as much, but now I'm trying to slow down because I was like,
why don't you finish it, but then do it again and do all the exploring?
Because that's so much work.
Okay, I'm just saying. That was like Grand Theft Auto. Like you beat Grand Theft Auto, but then you play it again and you just
do everything,
off and do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. We also had more time when Grand Theft Auto 3 came out.
That's true.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
Did you do an evil game. Character yet, Paul?
You can't really do an evil like in Hogwarts Legacy. Like it's RPG, but there's no morality system or anything like that. Like you can annoy some people with some of your answers, and like people get mad. Like, the good people get mad when you do, like, the unforgivable curses and stuff. And you could choose not to learn them. But I was like, no, give it to me. Let me do this.
Because that would be a worthwhile replay. Then you're like, okay, I'll be the really nice, good student. And then, like, okay, now I'm going to go to the dark side and learn Avada Kedavra, Crucio, and all those.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that are hoping. Because the game sold like a ton its first week or two.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a sequel at some point. A lot of people are hoping that they add some more of like the morality stuff and like making choices.
You think they're going to bring it to present day and get the actual characters we know and love in there?
I'd rather they didn't. I kind of like.
I totally get that.
I like how it's a very contained story. There are some nods to like other things in the franchise, but for the most part, it is its own thing. And I think it benefits from
it's
that.
It's fresh.
Yeah. And it's not held down by any of the lore or anything like that.
You
do your own story. But anywho, so we are talking about a film that is going to be a little divisive just among the two of us, me and Sean.
Maybe Brendan.
We don't know.
But we can agree that this was a shift in the tone of the movies.
Yes, we can. And the aesthetic.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Dumbledore looks totally different in this movie.
I know, man. Plastic surgery is just amazing.
Why is he so much angrier?
It looks like it could be a whole other actor.
Is that Ian McKellen? No, we're going to talk about that, though. But yes, so we're going to start off. We are going to talk about some of the changes in cast.
Mm-hmm.
And per request by listener, who I won't mention by name, we're also going to talk about some of our favorite scenes. We're going to talk about some of the things that we don't like about this movie, some of the things that we do like about this movie, and kind of see where it goes from there. Maybe even take a break somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah, breaks.
Breaks. Who needs breaks? But anyway, so... Sean, do you have some of the new cast members, or do you want to talk about the returning ones first?
Well, we can mention the returning ones first. Then, obviously, the big three are Harry, Ron, and Hermione, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and why am I blanking
Rupert
on his name?
Grint.
Rupert Grint. Thank you very much. Wow, that was just a brain fart. So those are the three big ones. Obviously, Robbie Coltrane returning as Rubeus Hagrid, Richard Griffiths as Vernon Dursley, Alan Rickman as Severus Snape, Fiona Shaw as Petunia Dursley, Maggie Smith as Minerva McGonagall, and Julie Walters as Molly Weasley. Those are the main big name cast members that have returned now.
You mentioned
most of them for all three.
Yeah. We got Fred and George Weasley also. Like, basically the entire Weasley clan comes back.
Pretty much. And then, obviously, Mr. Weasley, Mark Williams, he's back. Bonnie Wright as Ginny.
Tom Felton as Malfoy.
Yep. All the young actors are back. None of the young actors were replaced throughout the movies.
There isn't a whole lot of replacing of actors in this franchise.
No. Dumbledore is the only one.
Like, the biggest one that I could think of.
Yeah.
Oh, and also...
Biggest one, I think.
Crab and Doyle, they got rid of one of them.
Yep. Yeah, which...
He got arrested. The
is
actor.
That what it was?
Yeah, the actor got
arrested.
But
then he came back.
No.
Which one?
Either Crab or Doyle. One of them got arrested, like actors got arrested. So they just gave it...
a different actor.
They just cast out and brand new character and all that. It was weird. But anywho, so let's talk about then, really quick. Sean, you mentioned the aesthetic of this film because there is somebody else new to this franchise, and that's the director.
That is the director. So obviously, Chris Columbus was offered the opportunity to return to the director's chair. He chose to just stick to being a producer on this movie so he can have more time with his kids. Excuse me. So the obvious, now we get to, who's going to take over this huge franchise, because by now the Harry Potter film franchise is a money-making machine for Warner Brothers. They do not want to mess this up. So some of the big name directors that were approached to take over the movies were Shyamalan.
Dear God.
But he declined because he was working on The Village.
Because this was right after...
This is like 2000... It was probably being filmed in the 2003, and it wasn't released till July. This is also the first movie that was released in an 18-month schedule. So this is the first time where we had to wait more than a year to get the movie. And then from this point on, the movies came out pretty much in year-and-a-half increments.
All right, so you know what? This is going to be this week's Fan Feedback Friday question. But I'm going to ask you right now, because this just came to me. If M. Night Shyamalan had directed a Harry Potter movie, any one of them, what would be the twist? Because M. Night Shyamalan's got to have a twist.
I don't even want to think about it.
Voldemort was the good guy all along.
No, he couldn't. Listen, I mean, I think M. Night
this
Shyamalan...
would work for him. This book would work for him in a sense, because there is the twist about the reveal at the end with Sirius. So
Sirius and Peter Pettigrew.
There's your M. Night Shyamalan twist already built into the story.
Yeah.
Oh, dang. He just made it twistier.
Guillermo del Toro was approached, but he was not a fan of the first two films, which he thought were very bright and happy. And so,
yeah, not his aesthetic.
And then Mark Foster, who did not want to work with child actors again after he had just completed Finding Neverland. And then surprisingly, they approached an actor who was just in the previous film, Kenneth Branagh. Because Kenneth Branagh, we know, is an accomplished director as well as an actor. But they eventually chose Alfonso Cuarón in July of 2002. He was initially reluctant to direct the film as he had not read any of the books or seen any of the movies.
I feel like sometimes that's actually better. To not go in with your own implicit bias.
That's fair.
Yes and no.
It can be.
There have been times where you find out they hadn't read the source material and you're like, oh, that's why this is completely off or terrible or whatnot. I think there's a famous one regarding Batman 89 where apparently Tim Burton never saw or read a comic book before, and Kevin Smith was like, well, that explains the first two Batman movies then.
But see, it's funny because the directors get a lot of whatever criticism or praise always goes to the director. The director's there just to bring out the emotion and of the actors. They're literally directing the actors. You have so many people on a film that contribute to – Kevin Smith, speaking of which, he talked about his time on The Flash and Supergirl. And he's like – yeah. His episodes are lauded, but he's like, I don't know why. It's not me. Especially on a TV show where they do their thing every single week. It's like Law and Order. Yeah. Law and Order – is the exact same show every single week.
Yeah.
Format-wise, it's procedural. It doesn't matter who the director is. It always looks the exact same.
It's a story.
Yeah. So I think for Harry Potter, the director's going to make a big difference, but in all honesty, there's so many other things already going on that you can't do too many differences.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you – okay. Let's start with Brendan. Brendan, what did you think of the change in direction, aesthetic – tone, theme, anything?
Originally did not like it. Granted, I haven't seen this movie in a long time, probably since it came out, but I remember I don't like this. This is too dark. It's too I didn't like the direction of the characters, or I just didn't have the feeling of it. I was like, this is just too dark. I'm like, I like the brighter bit. I understand the need for growth, but my original reaction was like, I don't care for this. But on the flip side, I also felt like this was the first movie that kind of was more like a movie. In that, it's using foreshadowing, it's setting up some stuff, because I never remember there being a clock tower before in Hogwarts before or since this movie, but thematically you need a clock tower, and I felt that was, a great change, if you want to talk about by the director or whoever, to kind of help make this go through with a running theme in the movie and help set up some foreshadowing and whatnot.
That's fair. All right, Sean, what do you think?
I loved it, and what I loved about it was so... the opposite of what we got in the first two movies. But I didn't feel like it was trying to dismiss the first two movies. I thought it was a perfect description of the fact that these kids were getting older. Mm-hmm. It was a more mature tone that obviously the books were taking. So you had to, in my opinion, in the movies now follow suit and also get a mature tone. I mean, perfect example is in the first two movies, the characters are always in their robes, their outfits.
Yeah.
In this movie, they're in regular modern clothes. If they're in their wardrobes, their shirts are unbuttoned and stuff like that. There's definitely just a laid back feeling to it that I liked. Not so uniform. Just the obviously, as Brendan said with the clock tower, there was aspects of Hogwarts that we had never seen before. The clock tower, I don't think we've seen that in any other of the movie. But the bridge was a big one. Now, this was the first movie where the bridge made an appearance, which obviously made a big return in Deathly Hallows. Mm. And, it just had an interesting look to it. And I really enjoyed that.
All right. I agree. I definitely do. I think that the change in tone, it matches, kids growing up and starting off, especially they're at a private school, basically.
When you think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, Hogwarts is tuition free. For anybody who didn't know, apparently it is completely funded by the Ministry of Magic. Obviously, this children are responsible for their own materials and stuff like that. But yeah, it is a public school, basically. A public-private school. Magic is awesome. And I hate how, it doesn't really exist. Stupid. Stupid real world with its stupid real stupidness. But I definitely, you see a lot more of the castle. This is definitely the film where it starts to get darker and it starts to get a little bit more mature. The ending third is pretty, I don't want to say scary, but it's definitely a little bit more. Granted, Harry does light Professor Quirrell basically on fire with his bare hands in the first movie. So this is the first
like a one-off. Giant, that won't happen again.
Giant behemoth snake in the second movie.
It's weird how Harry couldn't see Thestrals though until Cedric died, even though he burned Quirrell alive.
But did Quirrell live? I'm trying to remember now.
He Quirrell died. Yeah, he couldn't touch Harry. So he tried to touch Harry, and he's
yeah,
like,
that
ah.
I remember.
And then so Harry was like, well, I better just hold your face until you die. Yeah, Harry's bloodthirsty.
I would say your point then goes to the idea that she is really good. J.K. Rowling was really good that in each individual story, everything makes sense. But when you start extrapolating out, you're like, ooh, there's some plot holes here and there where this one starts a lot of the plot holes. Like, why didn't they just do this in book six?
Why didn't they just use the time charmer and go all the way back and kill Voldemort as a baby? Stupid. That's how they did the how it should have ended for it.
Well, where, why, you know, if you have yeah. a time machine, why don't you just go back and kill him while he's on the crapper?
Yeah.
How about no, Scott?
Don't you Austin Powers me right now. But the how it should have ended, it shows Snape turning it back one turn at a time. And he's like, 9,932. 9,933. But yeah, yep. that's how it would be. Because this is, we'll talk about the time turner and all that stuff in a second. But for me, though, going back to the theme and the aesthetics and all that, I think this is the first film where the general look is just a little bit bleaker. And the Warner Brothers logos, like the Harry Potter opening credits, they mm-hmm. get darker and darker each movie.
Yeah. So I mean, the first one was just like,
oh, I never noticed
bright,
that.
Yeah. You know, Warner Brothers logo. And then, you know, now we're getting in the night. I love the opening to this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's really good.
With him doing the magic in his room.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Harry's not supposed to use magic outside of school. Like, it's a whole big thing that they then address. Like, oh, you're not in trouble for blowing up your aunt. Well, shit happens.
Don't they have homework throughout the...
Yes, but he's not supposed to be using... He got expelled from Hogwarts, like, no, the next movie.
I get
or,
that,
no,
but
in,
like,
five.
If you have homework
five,
to do,
yeah.
you have to use your wand, don't you?
Nope, it's all parchment.
Nope, you can do research.
You can do research.
I think mostly essays they have to write.
But the kid couldn't find a flashlight in that house? Nope, got to use the magic.
Yeah.
And doesn't get in any trouble. But anyway.
They make a point about that. No, because when they, in the second one, the twins, they learned how to pick locks because they didn't want to, you know, use magic because they're not supposed to. They made an actual point in the books to learn how to pick locks.
Yeah, so in the second movie, they think that the magic Dobby's doing is Harry. So they end up kicking him out of school. But then they're like, no, we changed our minds. It's cool. And then in this one, Harry's afraid, and they do an actual scene where Fudge is like, no, come on.
Well, you know why he was doing the Lumos. Yeah. He needed to find his porn stash in his room.
Imagine. See, that Ooh. Also freaks me out because all those pictures are alive. Oh, no.
Not a wizard porn, oh, but, you know, like.
You know that there's a business for it. Only wands. Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely.
Is this the one where I think they show the Marauders map and there's two students apparently map that are kind of
their feet are lined up a certain way.
I've actually never caught that.
It's during the end credits.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's cool. But, is it Ron and Hermione?
No, ew, I don't ship them. It should have been Harry and Hermione. Come on. Oh, yeah, we all know that.
Here we go.
All right. So, let's talk some of our new cast members though. The biggest one being Michael Gambon as Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, sadly, Richard Harris had passed away right before right after filming had ended on Chamber of Secrets. So, this was a big deal for a couple months who was going to play Dumbledore, and obviously one of the big names was Ian McKellen.
But he chose not to do it because he just played Gandalf.
He just played Gandalf. I mean, and I'm glad they didn't go with him because it just would have been,
It would have been hard to unsee him as, like, oh.
Yeah, because, I mean, with the white
Gandalf.
Beard, I mean, it would have been interesting.
I'm Gandalf the Dumbledore. No, Michael, or Ian, that's not the line.
Christopher Lee was apparently offered the role, which would have been interesting.
I would have preferred to see him from the first movie on, because that would have been a big
adjustment. He would have been more like Richard Harris.
Yeah.
Peter O'Toole was another one that was approached. He would have also been an interesting, but again, he... I feel would have been more like Richard Harris. I think when they cast Michael Gambon, it was a nod that the character was going to change in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, the way he talked, the way he acted. He just had a more liveliness to him.
Mm-hmm.
That not that Richard Harris didn't, you know, have a lot. Richard Harris had that grandfathery look. Michael Gambon had that cool uncle, like hippie uncle look.
Yeah, he was that burnout uncle.
Yeah,
that would definitely pass you some weed.
And maybe you guys can and tell, because I, again, the books were not my big to do, but did you notice that in the books? Was the character like changing in that term, or did the movie
The movies are really what was the bigger catalyst for change. Really, you don't see Dumbledore differently until I would say Order of the Phoenix, because that's also when he starts he starts getting a little bit more physical. Like he fights Voldemort in that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. No, I think with Gambit, by going slightly younger, he does give, I think he gives Dumbledore more of an active presence. Like, here's somebody who's going to be running around and doing stuff, as opposed to the Richard Harris, where it's much more, like you said, grandfatherly, stately, regal, and you can't really imagine him running down a corridor chasing after Dementors or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame, too, because, like, when I thought of Dumbledore, I always thought of almost like Yoda, where, like, Attack of the Clones, and he pulls out that lightsaber and suddenly he's, like, badass. The problem is, in the films especially, you never get that sense of how powerful Dumbledore really is. When he fights Voldemort, you see it. Yeah. And it's
and also in Half-Blood Prince, when they're trying to find the...
When he fights the Inferi, yeah, that's a great shot. But, like, otherwise... this is Dumbledore with the Elder Wand and all that stuff. Yeah. I haven't, full disclosure, I've not seen all the Fantastic Beasts films.
Me neither.
I liked the first one, and then I feel like they did The Hobbit with it, where it's like, all right, let's milk this one. But for me, like, the first one was fine, and I'm sure Jude Law did a great job as Dumbledore, but same thing, he's very much on the sidelines. It's not a Dumbledore movie.
No.
I'd watch a Dumbledore movie, though.
That would be interesting.
Like a young Dumbledore.
I always felt that Dumbledore was, again, just that he's the old wise man in the Hero's Quest, that he's just there giving you advice. He is Obi-Wan for most of the movie, where he just gives you some good advice. Doesn't really get fight too much, you know, and I mean, he lasts a little longer than Obi-Wan does, but ultimately he's just there to give advice and help you learn more about yourself, like a teacher would, really.
Mm-hmm. So Michael Gambon, he gets the job done, but it's a very dramatic shift. Like, usually when you recast, mm-hmm, you get an actor that kind of matches the previous. I feel like he didn't even watch first two.
But I feel that was agreed upon by the filmmakers. It's not like they were like, hey, Michael, you know, go ahead, and he's just like, I'm not going to do anything close to what Richard was doing. I think it was a conscientious shift in how the character was going to be portrayed. Also, because in my opinion, I don't think Michael Gambon could have pulled off
a Richard Harris
impersonation. He's just his voice is different.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he looks different. If you had gone with Peter O'Toole or Christopher Lee, then I would be like, okay, you're going, or even McKellen even, you're going with a Richard Harris, you know, basically you're sticking with that look. I think by choosing Michael Gambon, it was, okay, we're gonna go in a little different, you know, way here with the character and how he's going to be portrayed.
That's fair. Also joining the cast is Gary Oldman as Sirius Black.
Perfect casting?
You think good. So?
I do. I love Gary. Gary Oldman's one of my favorite actors.
I do like Gary Oldman.
I mean, anything he's in, I thoroughly enjoy.
And you know what the best is? He openly says that he had taken this part just because he needed the money.
He needed the money. He hadn't worked in a while because he had taken time off for you know, hanging out with the kids instead of being with his children. But, and I mean, this is also the first family film he really did. I mean, before that, he was really, like, he would only do, like, R-rated movies, you know, and he would always play, like, a psychotic killer. I mean, like,
you know. Didn't you see Friends? Come on.
That was actually, I think, the same year as this.
Oh, was it really? That's funny.
I think.
It's Commissioner Gordon.
I mean, you know, this is the guy who played Dracula. He played Lee Harvey Oswald. He played the killer in Air Force One. You know, it's...
Everyone! That guy.
So...
But, yeah, I think this movie kind of brought him back a little bit. Because right after this movie, you said he's Commissioner Gordon.
That's right.
I think he gets... In Darkest Hour or something relatively soon. Like,
I forgot about.
He started popping up everywhere. Was he in Tinker Tanker?
Yes.
Tinker Tanker Soldier.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
That was his first Academy Award nomination.
I had to put it together in my head.
I compared a little to Johnny Depp doing Pirates. He became much more of a commercial actor.
Oh yeah,
after this movie, he became, you know, he was always a well-respected actor and was very much lauded for his work. But I think this movie really brought him out into the general public of, oh hey, Gary Oldman's in this. Okay, let's go see it.
Yeah, he's got quite a devoted fan base. I think I respect it because I think he is very good at what he does. But I'll go see a Gary Oldman movie at this point, just because he's a very thespian type actor.
Yes.
But for me, like Sirius Black, he definitely embodies it. It's weird because he's like the main thing of the, like, this movie has nothing to do with Voldemort.
No. Like, this is like the only book that really doesn't have a Voldemort like storyline.
Like, obviously Voldemort is mentioned several times, and we find out that it's Peter Pettigrew who betrayed Harry's parents.
Spoiler.
So, yeah, spoiler. Sorry, guys. But for me, like, it's weird because he's not in this movie much.
And I think that might be why I like it.
Yeah.
Because obviously we got him in the first movie, and then technically we got him in the second movie. So I thought it was a bit of a refresh. Okay, So Voldemort is not the villain of this book slash now the movie. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, this is good. And it's, I love the backstory, which, yeah. you know, of the character of Sirius Black and how it's, he is basically, he was the best friend of Harry's father. I mean, they grew up together. They were best friends. And to everyone in the world, he betrayed that and was a disciple of Voldemort.
Yeah.
And I always love backstories like that where you get a character who you find out is actually not who they seem.
What about you, Brian? What do you think of Sirius Black in this film?
I think originally I didn't really care for the character as much. I think it's a good thing for Harry to have that he needed the Godfather. I think that connection to his parents. I do think it's a good character that he needs in his life. But I guess I just at times I was like either maybe the character was cringy or like oh I'm after this one thing. And I think the idea that they keep playing he's after Harry like not really, he's after something else that kind of like switch where it's like oh no, it just so happens that Scabbers is everywhere or he's always with Ron, so clearly he's going after Scabbers with Ron, but it looks like because Ron's with Harry all the time he's after Harry. But there's I'm not the biggest fan of Sirius because I think he's somebody who's probably has the heart in the right place but goes about it the wrong way a lot of the time.
Yeah,
so I think there's that. Before we were prepping for this, I was trying to think, like, what are the things that they're trying to talk about, like, thematically again, or where you have different parallels? And I realized, oh, that was the whole point of the Buckbeak side plot, was to kind of be a parallel to everything that happened to Sirius Black, because it is the exact same kind of story where we all know that Buckbeak didn't, you know, he was insulted and that's why he attacked Malfoy. But to the outside world, Malfoy's story is the real one. So the outside world, everybody believes Sirius Black is a traitor and the killer, when in reality, if you're in the know, that wasn't how it went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish that they had explained a little bit more about, like, he goes on to say that when he was in Azkaban, so the Dementors suck your happiness away. And the Dementors are terrifying in this movie. They do a really good job.
They did a good job with the Dementors.
The only thing that really didn't fly with the Dementors was they were like, yo, the Dementors kiss. And like Snape's like, I hear it's unbearable to watch, but I will do my best. And then it's kind of anticlimactic when it finally happens. Just a little light comes out and then goes back in. He's fine. But the Dementors were otherwise terrifying in this. Yes. They say in the books that the reason that they couldn't take that happy thought from him, like that Peter Pettigrew is actually alive and he's going to kill him, was because it wasn't a happy thought. It was an obsession. Mm. And it was the only thing that was keeping him sane in Azkaban, which is wild. And that he escapes, you know, by turning into a dog and by, you know, building up almost like a resistance and letting them, because they can still affect him while he was a dog, but they didn't know he was a dog. The Dementors can't really see, I guess. There's a lot more in the books about his time in Azkaban. So I wish that they had done a little bit more with that.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that in the differences from the movie and the book.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot. This is really where the movies really started to cut a lot out because it was getting tough. It was, you know, how do we get all this into one movie?
Very carefully.
Do we know what the page count was for the third book?
It's long.
I think it's like it's probably like 300 to 400 pages. I think. I remember that the weekend the book four came out, I read book three and four in the same weekend.
I was gonna say because I remember book three was long, but then Goblet of Fire came out, and I remember you could like hold a door open with Goblet of Fire.
Still can.
You know, so.
But it's funny.
I think.
Okay, go ahead.
You're trying to take 350 odd pages and try to cram that into a running time of probably about 2 hours.
Sounds about right.
142 minutes, so 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. But they said after Goblet that they were going to try and make the books a little bit shorter. Then obviously that did not happen, and they only got bigger and bigger and longer and longer.
Five got shorter. Five was shorter or six was shorter? One of them was shorter.
I don't know.
I think six was shorter than five, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
But then obviously we get Deathly Hallows.
Which is the biggest. That you could hold two doors open with, probably.
Just a comment, Paul, on what you said in previous ones about how you went to Kmart. Yeah, I was one of those people for at least two or three of those occasions at Barnes & Noble in the Cortland Town Center at midnight waiting to get my book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you got to learn today.
When six came out, there were some, we'll call them jerks, that were driving around who had already bought the book, read the last few chapters, and was shouting out spoilers to everybody in the parking lot.
Savage.
Take a rock and throw it at their car.
I'd take one of the books. They're heavy.
But you just paid money for the book. Would you really want to do that?
You put a string on it, you throw the book, and then you pull it back really hard. Yeah, that's what
there you
do.
Go.
Or a bungee.
Sounds like someone in Mayapack.
Yeah. And speaking of new characters and actors, we have David Thewlis as Remus Lupin. I was okay with... I like David Thewlis. I really do.
Thewlin.
What?
David Thewlis.
That's what I said.
You were like fools.
It's that too. It's what, is he here? Is he here to correct me?
You never know.
Is he here to correct you? Maybe you're saying it wrong.
Maybe.
Why are you being so mean? Stop showing off for Brendan.
So real quick, Harry Potter, Prisoner of Azkaban, 317 pages. Goblet of Fire, 636 pages.
Woof. What a jump. All right,
so the 1,000 pages that week and I read. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't, Remus Lupin, I wanted more of like the, they do a great job showing him like just kind of sad and miserable all the time. Poor Remus.
But he was also another character that I just kind of, he was like, again, he was like a cool uncle.
Yeah. I did like him.
But again, more in the book. And as we'll get into that, you know, there was the backstory of Black Lupin and obviously Harry's parents was very much cut from the movie.
They don't even say that they're the Marauders.
No. Like, which is funny how all of a sudden, like, realizing that, and I'm like, because, like, you know from the book, like, oh, they're the Marauders. And I'm like, oh, they never do mention that in the movie.
And even better, in, I think it's Order of the Phoenix, Harry gives Snape the coded message, and he says, like, they have prongs, or they have Padfoot in the place where it's hidden. Harry shouldn't even know who Padfoot is then, because they do mention them by name.
Yeah.
But when he gets the map.
By then that they know, like.
Yeah, by then they've had that conversation, I guess.
But fun fact about David Thewlis, he was originally offered the role of Quirrell in the first movie.
Really?
But he turned it down, and he accepted the role of Lupin from the actor who played Quirrell and said, you know, you have the best part in the book, so take the role.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Lupin is probably the best, one of the better characters. He's well-written. He's in the book, he's in it a lot more.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I definitely enjoyed him, and him and Harry, again, it's because they cut so much out from the books. Like, we as readers of the books know the relationship between Harry and
Lupin,
especially towards the end of the series. Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Lupin. But
yeah, that was one of the.
That was a rough one. I was kind of upset that that happened.
What I did like in this too is we finally get a Defense Against the Dark Arts professor who kind of can stand his own, who knows a thing or two. They may comment that in the book. I'm not sure. Remember if they do that in the movie? But like, oh, here's a guy who. Oh, let's. He's cold from the Dementor. Give him some chocolate. He knows how to defend against the dark arts, which I kind of liked as a change of pace because it felt like the first two professors with Lockhart and with Quirrell, they just seemed like amateurs who didn't know what they were doing. And so, like, I'm glad they didn't really continue a trope of having incompetent, like it being like a trope, like every year they get an incompetent, silly character to be the Defense Against the Dark Arts person.
And then you get Moody, who actively tortures really children.
Good. Yeah. Really good at his job.
There's a theory.
But it wasn't Moody. Yeah.
But there's a theory, and we'll talk about it next week. They don't do it in the movie, but in the book of Goblet of Fire, he practices Imperio on all the kids, especially Harry. There's a theory that he was doing it to test to see if Harry could be controlled by the Imperial Curse so he can just have him grab the key or the port key and get sent to the graveyard.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a fun theory. But that is the biggest. Oh, we also have Peter Pettigrew.
Timothy Spall, very good actor, and he fit the character perfectly for the whopping 10 minutes that we see him.
Yeah.
Big one, because she's a fantastic actress, but the character really never got another. I think she appears in Order of the Phoenix, but that's Emma Thompson as Professor Trelawney, and she really hammed it up.
Oh my gosh, she was so perfect.
She was great. She was so good.
She didn't care. And Trelawney's one of those characters. She's got a very devoted following.
Yeah.
More probably her aesthetic and all that stuff. But I do like how Hermione, it's the only teacher Hermione will ever say something to or talk back to. But so that's the biggest.
I never liked Trelawney. I felt bad for her when I think in 5 when she was about to be sacked by like.
Oh, she was sacked. Did not care. Dumbledore let her stay in the castle because he's like, you can control the staff, but this is my house.
Yeah, but I never liked Trelawney.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk our favorite scenes, our least favorite parts of the movie, and
the differences.
Some of the differences. Book. And, of course, Fan Feedback Friday. But first, a quick break. Hey, guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on set as a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service. You're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction. All right, we are back, and we're going to do it a little bit differently this time. We're not going to go through much of the plot. We've kind of already talked plot. But we're going to talk about some of our favorite scenes and, of course, some of the things that maybe we didn't like too much about this movie. So let's start – we'll always start with the good. Sean, a favorite scene of yours that comes to mind?
I love the first scene with Lupin in the classroom when he takes the class and they're dealing with the Bogart.
Humphrey Bogart.
Thank you. Yeah. And they got the swing music playing. Mm-hmm. I love that scene.
Do either of you guys find any sort of trouble with that? Like, imagine if like a kid actually had like some sort of traumatic, terrifying like ordeal that they went through. Like, obviously, he stops Harry from doing it because, you know, he's seen real trauma. But like, that could be like, imagine everybody in your class seeing the one thing that you're more afraid of than anything else.
Well, I mean, they did. They all,
I know, but like in the movie, it's like fun and it's like all that. But well, like, imagine like you're 14.
Yeah. Right. But that's the whole point. You're trying to fight what you're scared of.
I know, but now everybody sees it.
Yeah, but it was
exactly. And people talk, you know, like, oh, so and so's afraid of like, because like, okay, spiders, you kind of understand. I don't remember what else.
Clown,
but, like,
there was a clown.
Why would
one.
You be afraid of something like, you know, or something like silly comes out and you're like, oh, so-and-so's afraid of that? Like, and then you tell your next person and it spreads throughout the whole school.
I love that the Snape comes out and then they turn him into his, well, in the his book, grandmother's clothes.
In the book, they apparently that comes back to bite Neville.
Oh, quite really?
Some, yeah, because people in the classroom talked.
Oh, yeah, because Snape.
Yeah, because I think Malfoy's in it.
Yeah.
All the Slytherins are there, so it gets back. And so, like, apparently for the next couple of chapters, they mentioned that, you know, Snape's been, like, nasty to Neville, especially, for all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, imagine, again, something like that. Horrifying. What about you, Brennan? A favorite scene in this film?
I like it when Hermione slugs one on Malfoy there, actually. Because you don't really see a lot of physical violence, I feel like. So the idea that she's like, you know, I finally, because we all wanted to do that. By this point, it's like, you know, Malfoy's that kind of bully that he does everything to push everybody's buttons. And you know he's in the wrong. But because of his position and his power and his money, you really can't get back at him because the teacher never sees Malfoy do something to you. They always see what the retaliation is and you get in trouble. So it's finally nice that for once we're all like, yes, we finally got to hit Malfoy and he can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm.
I like a personal favorite of mine is the werewolf transformation scene.
Okay.
When Lupin starts turning and then, you know, obviously he changes and Snape gets out and he actually tries to protect all the kids.
Yeah.
You see him like push them all behind him.
Yeah.
So that scene always kind of stuck with me. I really did enjoy that scene. I hated how Hermione was the one that did the werewolf call to attract
that Lupin. That bothers you?
Things like that, dude. I don't know why. Like, just for some reason, I was like,
because
really?
That wasn't in the book.
I don't think so. Like, yeah, I think they do things to help in the book, like when they go back in time. But yeah, it's weird. But yeah. Otherwise, like, I really do enjoy that scene. But let's see. Anything that we don't like?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because I really do like this movie. And I'm trying to think of something that just is not the best, but
I feel like we maybe could argue the confrontation in the shack could be something, because it's one of those things where like Snape is very much, you know, oh, I got the story all figured out, I know how it is, and we're like, no, you don't, and you're not waiting, you're not going to listen to us like a reasonable person would. You're just going to be like, nope, clearly Sirius Black is here to kill Harry, I will kill Sirius in response, so I get to do what I want and I'll be a big hero and whatnot. And you're like, dude, if you just stop and listen to us and not ignore us because we're teenagers that are happen to be here, things might, in theory, be better, but we know that's not Snape.
Yeah. I think the scene in the Shrieking Shack where it's everything's coming to a head, you know, it just seemed very rushed. Mm-hmm. And I think I was like, you know, stretch it out a little. Let's like slow it down. We want to hear the backstory. We want to hear what's going on. And it was just, even the actors, I remember, were talking very fast. It was just very like rushing. Like, it's like, oh, Peter Pettigrew's alive. Oh, show me. Oh, this. Oh, that. Oh, Snape's here. Oh, Expelliarmus. Oh, boom.
Yeah, it was very, very fast-paced
like,
ending.
Okay, that was quick. Mm-hmm. So I thought that could have been maybe like slowed down a little. It would have been maybe a much better, interesting scene to let the actors really kind of like down, you know, dive deep into the backstory of what happened. Maybe even see Lupin and Black really kind of, you know, say, oh, man, I really thought you killed the Peter, like, you know, like, until 2 days ago, I thought you were this horrible person. You never got any of that. So I just thought, you know, maybe that was my only gripe with the movie. It just seemed very, you know, forced.
Right. For me, I hate how they took out the whole Firebolt subplot.
Yeah.
There's a whole part of the story where Hermione is on the outs with Ron and Harry because Harry gets the firebolt after his broom is destroyed. Because I think this is also the last one with Quidditch. No. They bring Quidditch back in like 5 or 6 with Ginny.
With Ginny, but Quidditch was the first book where they win the Quidditch Cup.
Yeah,
and it's totally except for the scene with the Dementor. There's no Quidditch in this movie. And I remember reading that was going to happen and being pissed.
Yeah, it's weird because people forget that there's the House Cup and then there's the Quidditch Cup. Like they were two separate things. They've never mentioned the Quidditch Cup in any of these films.
Nah.
So yeah, I agree. And then for like in that story though, it leads to why Hermione's having so much trouble between the time turner in classes and overdoing it. Also now she doesn't have, and like Hagrid's the one who's like, she's been down here every day crying. Because, like, you guys suck. Because she was trying to do the right thing. He gets this firebolt, and nobody knows who it's from. So Hermione actually does figure out that it is from Sirius Black. But in the book, she turns it over to McGonagall because they don't know he's a good guy at this point. And, like, I think there's, like, a scene where they're actually, like, taking it apart. Or, like, she says she has to take it apart to find Jinx's. And, like, Ron's, like, mortified. He's like, oh, gosh, you know, it's the best broom ever. But for me, like that taking out that whole subplot, I get why they did it. And then that ending freeze shot of
that's just weird.
Yeah,
where it just freezes on his face in like pure joy, and it's just weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, also in the books, he hated flying on Buckbeak. Like he hated it. He actively was like, "This is the worst thing ever." But of course, it's way more cinematic if he's like King of the World.
That is a cool scene though, where he's flying around the castle.
Oh, it's a really cool scene.
And the music.
Fun fact: in Hogwarts Legacy, you can use a hippogriff to fly, but it sucks. Like you get the broom super early in the game, and once you get the hippogriff, like the broom is way better.
Yeah,
it's weird. But any other favorite scenes before we wrap up and do Fan Feedback Friday?
I do love the. Which one? Why am I blanking? The. Oh my God! Why am I blanking? Someone else talk.
Obliviate. Somebody used the Obliviate.
Oh, the train sequence. I love when
with the Dementors. Yeah, that's a great sequence.
And then the song.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that was
something.
That was
a trailer.
The trailer was that song, and then just the hand of the Dementor. Like it was some creepy imagery. I really did enjoy it.
The only not so much a like a dislike. I just never got the idea of like the end when Harry cast the Patronus to save himself from Dementor. Like how did you cast it this time? Like I just knew that I could, and I'm like.
That's not a happy memory. That's not a weird. That's a weird happy memory.
It wasn't my dad. It was me. And then I knew I could do it because I'd already done it.
And I don't get. And they made the weird aesthetic choice of having it kind of like explode and radiate. And then in the next one where he uses, or not the next one, in Order of the Phoenix when he uses it, save Dudley, he uses it like in the actual books where it's just an animal that's basically just charging back and forth. So. Interesting. Star City rating for Prisoner of Azkaban, Sean.
I give it a 4.
You're going to give it a 4. That is a big one.
It's my favorite movie.
Favorite movie. All right. Brendan?
I'm going to give it a 3. It wasn't something that, you know, like, okay, this is nice, but I'm, you know, maybe 3.5 because the making it more like a movie with, like, remember bringing back to the clock and all that stuff that I really liked, but wasn't really like, oh, wow.
I'm going to go 3 as well. It's better than it's above average. It's a good film. It's definitely a tonal shift. And
so you think this is a worse movie than Chamber of Secrets?
What did I give Chamber of Secrets?
I think you gave Chamber of Secrets a 3.5.
Then I'll give this a 3.5. They're on par with each other.
I could be wrong.
I don't remember. But yeah, I will always say that this is not my favorite film. It was not my favorite book. And it's got a huge following of people that do love it. For some reason, a lot of people think that this is one of the best books.
I think it's the best book. And I also think it's the best movie. I know for a fact I am in the minority on the movie, but I think the book is highly regarded as one of the best of the books.
So some of the biggest differences where Aunt Marge ends up. So in the movie, she's later mentioned in the movie that the floating Aunt Marge is seen circling a chimney. So they managed to get her back in the books a lot faster. Let's see. In the book, Harry asked Cornelius Fudge to sign his Hogsmeade form, which they never address again. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Harry hated flying on Buckbeak in the books.
No Cho Chang, because this is the first book where Cho Chang as a character is talked about.
Because there's no Quidditch, unfortunately. But
the whole Marauder's Map, not knowing that it's actually his father and Sirius and Lupin and Pettigrew who created the Marauder's Map.
The Patronus thing we mentioned, Brendan also specifically said, you know, happy memory versus just knowing I can do it. The Firebolts. We mentioned that as well. Harry and Gryffindor winning the Quidditch Cup happened in the books, not in there. The Hogwarts Choir was... What? It doesn't exist in the book.
Yeah, interesting. No, that was definitely an addition.
Oh, Ron gets a new owl.
Oh, Pigwidgeon, yeah.
Yeah, and the letter from Sirius at the end, because he feels bad for getting rid of his rat. And, of course, the missing backstory from the Marauders. Those are 10 of the biggest ones. There's a ton, but those are, like, the ones that people notice the most. But we do have our Fan Feedback Friday for this week. Now, this week, I do believe it was Best Harry Potter Book and Movie. So we have a book, Goblet of Fire, movie, Prisoner of Azkaban. We have a next one, book Prisoner of Azkaban, movie Prisoner of Azkaban, book Half-Blood Prince, movie Chamber of Secrets, and book Order of the Phoenix, Deathly Hallows Part 2. I didn't actually participate in this one. I would say my favorite book is still Goblet of Fire, and I would say my favorite movie is actually Order of the Phoenix.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I like it.
All right.
My favorite book is Goblet of Fire. I think a little bit of that is because of nostalgia, because that's really when I took the dive. Like, that's the first one. Like, on release weekend, I bought it, and I'm really excited, and I read everything with that one. Movies, I don't really think I have a favorite per se. I think if I had it, I might go with maybe the second one. Deathly Hallows Part 2, just because it finished everything out. Mm-hmm. So...
All right.
Well, the movie was released on May 23rd, 2004, and it ended up earning $797 million worldwide, which it was the second highest grossing film behind Shrek 2 for 2004.
I like Shrek 2. But anyway, so that's going to wrap us up for
today. I always find it funny, like, a movie like Shrek 2 beats out Harry Potter.
Family films always have their own giant niche, yeah. And Harry Potter has a niche, but it's not...
Shrek was huge, though.
Shrek was huge.
Shrek 2 is...
fantastic.
It was a great movie. I think also the Harry Potter really, in my opinion, I think took off with Goblet of Fire, the movies.
Yeah.
Like, the movies were successful, don't get me wrong. They made a lot of money, but I think the couldn't wait, the craziness really started with Goblet of Fire, which I think came out now a year and a half later, and because I was in college when the Goblet of Fire came out. But it's still $800 million. Can't sneeze at that.
I cannot sneeze at that.
You can't sneeze?
Can't sneeze. But that's going to wrap us up for today. If you guys are looking for more of our content, obviously our website, themisfitfaction.com. If you guys are looking for our social media or want to participate in Fan Feedback Friday, it's super easy. You find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever it is. Type in either Cinematic Adventures or The Misfit Faction. Odds are you'll find some of our stuff. And if you guys are Magic the Gathering gaming nerds, much like myself and Brendan, if you're looking a little bit for his content, you can go on YouTube, type in BlindBat8719. No eyes, because there's no eyes in a blind bat. BlindBat8719 on YouTube, and you'll find more of Brendan's handiwork there. But
thank you very much. Thank you for the shout out.
Of course. So that's going to wrap us up for today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Brendan.
Yeah, you're Brendan. It's okay. You can do it. It's fine. And we will see you guys next time.